he snapped as she stiffened in rage. "But I think it better punishment that you live out your years, never able to touch me or bend me to a single thing your scheming desires."
"Jessica, what have you done?"
the old woman demanded. "I'll give you only one thing," Paul said. "You saw part of what the race needs, but how poorly you saw it. You think to control human breeding and intermix a select few according to your master plan. How little you understand of what—"
"You mustn't speak of these things," the old woman hissed.
"Silence!" Paul roared. The words seemed to take substance as it twisted through the air between them under Paul's control. The old woman reeled back into the arms of those behind her, face blank with shock at the power with which he had seized her psyche.
"Jessica," she whispered. "Jessica!"
"I remember your Gamjabar," Paul said. "You remember mine. I can kill you with a word." The Fremen around the hall glanced knowingly at each other. Did the legend not say, "And his word shall carry death eternal to those who stand against righteousness"? Paul turned his attention to the tall Princess Royal standing beside her Emperor father. Keeping his eyes focused on her, he said, "Majesty, we both know the way out of our difficulty." The Emperor glanced at his daughter, back to Paul.
"You dare? You? An adventurer without family? A nobody from—"
"You've already admitted who I am," Paul said. "Royal kinsman, you said. Let's stop this nonsense."
"I am your ruler," the Emperor said.
Paul glanced at the guildsmen standing now at the communications equipment and facing him. One of them nodded.
"I could force it," Paul said. "You will not dare," the Emperor grated.
Paul merely stared at him. The Princess Royal put a hand on her father's arm.
"Father," she said, and her voice was silky soft, soothing.
"Don't try your tricks on me," the Emperor said.
He looked at her.
"You don't need to do this, daughter. We've all the resources that—"
"But here's a man fit to be your son," she said.
The old Reverend Mother, her composure regained, forced her way to the Emperor's side, leaned close to his ear and whispered.
"She pleads your case," Jessica said.
Paul continued to look at the golden-haired princess. Aside to his mother, he said, "That's Irulan, the oldest, isn't it?"
"Yes."
Chani moved up on Paul's other side, said,
"Do you wish me to leave, Muad'Dib?"
He glanced at her.
"Leave? You'll never again leave my side."
"There's nothing binding between us," Chani said.
Paul looked down at her for a silent moment, then,
"Speak only truth with me, my Sahaya."
As she started to reply, he silenced her with a finger to her lips.
"That which binds us cannot be loosed," he said. "Now watch these matters closely, for I wish to see this room later through your wisdom."
The Emperor and his truthsayer were carrying on a heated, low-voiced argument. Paul spoke to his mother. "She reminds him that it's part of their agreement to place a Bene Gesserit on the throne, and Irulan is the one they've groomed for it."
"Was that their plan?"
Jessica said.
"Isn't it obvious?" Paul asked.
"I see the signs," Jessica snapped. "My question was meant to remind you that you should not try to teach me those matters in which I instructed you."
Paul glanced at her, caught a cold smile on her lips. Gurney Halleck leaned between them, said,
"I remind you, my lord, that there's a Harkonnen in that bunch."
He nodded toward the dark-haired Fade Rotha pressed against a barrier lance on the left.
"The one with the squinting eyes there on the left. As evil a face as I ever saw. You promised me once that—"
"Thank you, Gurney," Paul said.
"It's the Nah Baron. Baron now that the old man's dead," Gurney said. "He'll do for what I've—" "And can you take him, Gurney?"
"My lord, yes."
"That argument between the Emperor and his witch has gone on long enough, don't you think, mother?"
She nodded.
"Indeed."
Paul raised his voice, called out to the Emperor.
"Majesty, is there a Harkonnen among you?"
Royal disdain revealed itself in the way the Emperor turned to look at Paul.
"I believe my entourage has been placed under the protection of your ducal word," he said.
"My question was for information only," Paul said.
"I wish to know if a Harkonnen is officially a part of your entourage, or if a Harkonnen is merely hiding behind a technicality out of cowardice."
The Emperor's smile was calculating.
"Anyone accepted into the Imperial Company is a member of my entourage."
"You have the word of a duke," Paul said, "but Muad'Dib is another matter. He may not recognize your definition of what constitutes an entourage. My friend Gurney Halleck wishes to kill a Harkonnen. If he—"
"Canley,"
Fade Rotha shouted. He pressed against the barrier lance.
"Your father named this vendetta, Atreides. You call me coward while you hide among your women and offer to send a lackey against me."
The old truthsayer whispered something fiercely into the Emperor's ear, but he pushed her aside, said,
"Canley, is it? There are strict rules for Canley." Paul put a stop to this, Jessica said. My lord, Gurney said, you promised me my day against the Harkonnens.
You've had your day against them, Paul said, and he felt a harlequin abandon take over his emotions. He slipped his robe and hood from his shoulders, handed them to his mother with his belt and kris knife, began unstrapping his stillsuit. He sensed now that the universe focused on this moment.
There's no need for this, Jessica said. There are easier ways, Paul.
Paul stepped out of his stillsuit, slipped the kris knife from its sheath in his mother's hand. I know, he said. Poison, an assassin, all the old familiar ways.
You promised me a Harkonnen, Gurney hissed.
And Paul marked the rage in the man's face, the way the ink-fine scar stood out dark and ridged.
You owe it to me, my lord.
Have you suffered more from them than I? Paul asked.
My sister, Gurney rasped. My years in the slave pits, my father, Paul said. My good friends and companions, Thufir Hawat and Duncan Idaho. My years as a fugitive without rank or succor. And one more thing. It is now Canley, and you know as well as I the rules that must prevail.
Halleck's shoulders sagged.
My lord, if that swine... He's no more than a beast you'd spurn with your foot and discard the shoe because it had been contaminated. Call in an executioner if you must, or let me do it. But don't offer yourself to...
Muad'Dib need not do this thing, Chani said.
He glanced at her, saw the fear for him in her eyes.
But the Duke Paul must, he said. This is a Harkonnen animal, Gurney rasped.
Paul hesitated on the point of revealing his own Harkonnen ancestry, stopped at a sharp look from his mother, said merely,
But this being has human shape, Gurney, and deserves human doubt.
Gurney said, If he so much as... Please stand aside, Paul said. He hefted the kris knife, pushed Gurney gently aside.
Gurney,
Jessica said. She touched Gurney's arm.
He's like his grandfather in this mood. Don't distract him. It's the only thing you can do for him now.
And she thought,
Great mother, what irony.
The Emperor was studying Fade Rotha, seeing the heavy shoulders, the thick muscles. He turned to look at Paul, a stringy whipcord of a youth, not as desiccated as the Arakeen natives, but with ribs there to count, and sunken in the flanks so that the ripple and gather of muscles could be followed under the skin. Jessica leaned close to Paul, pitched her voice for his ears alone.
One thing, son. Sometimes a dangerous person is prepared by the Bene Gesserit, a word implanted into the deepest recesses by the old pleasure-pain methods. The word sound most frequently used is Uroshnor. If this one's been prepared, as I strongly suspect, that word uttered in his ear will render his muscles flaccid, and
I want no special advantage for this one, Paul said. Step back out of my way.
Gurney spoke to her.
Why is he doing this? Does he think to get himself killed and achieve martyrdom? This Fremen religious prattle, is that what clouds his reason?
Jessica hid her face in her hands, realizing that she did not know fully why Paul took this course. She could feel death in the room, and knew that the changed Paul was capable of such a thing as Gurney suggested. Every talent within her focused on the need to protect her son, but there was nothing she could do.
"Is it this religious prattle?"
Gurney insisted.
"Be silent," Jessica whispered, "and pray."
The Emperor's face was touched by an abrupt smile.
"If Fade Rotha Harkonnen, of my entourage, so wishes," he said, "I relieve him of all restraint, and give him freedom to choose his own course in this."
The Emperor waved a hand toward Paul's Fedakin guards.
"One of your rabble has my belt and short blade. If Fade Rotha wishes it, he may meet you with my blade in his hand."
"I wish it,"
Fade Rotha said, and Paul saw the elation on the man's face.
"He's overconfident," Paul thought. "There's a natural advantage I can accept."
"Get the Emperor's blade," Paul said, and watched as his command was obeyed. "Put it on the floor there."
He indicated a place with his foot.
"Clear the imperial rabble back against the wall and let the Harkonnen stand clear."
A flurry of robes, scraping of feet, low-voiced commands and protests accompanied obedience to Paul's command. The guildsmen remained standing near the communications equipment. They frowned at Paul in obvious indecision.
"They're accustomed to seeing the future," Paul thought. "In this place and time they're blind, even as I am."
And he sampled the time winds, sensing the turmoil, the storm nexus that now focused on this moment place. Even the faint gaps were closed now. Here was the unborn jihad he knew. Here was the race consciousness that he had known once as his own terrible purpose. Here was reason enough for a Quetzaltenarach or a Lizan al-Gaib, or even the halting schemes of the Bene Gesserit. The race of humans had felt its own dormancy, sensed itself grown stale, and knew now only the need to experience turmoil in which the genes would mingle and the strong new mixture survive. All humans were alive as an unconscious single organism in this moment.
experiencing a kind of sexual heat that could override any barrier. And Paul saw how futile were any efforts of his to change any smallest bit of this. He had thought to oppose the jihad within himself, but the jihad would be. His legions would rage out from Arrakis even without him. They needed only the legend he already had become. He had shown them the way, given them mastery even over the guild which must have the spice to exist. A sense of failure pervaded him, and he saw through it that Fade Rotha Harkonnen had slipped out of the torn uniform, stripped down to a fighting girdle with a male core. "This is the climax," Paul thought. "From here, the future will open, the clouds part unto a kind of glory. And if I die here, they'll say I sacrificed myself that my spirit might lead them. And if I live, they'll say nothing can oppose Muad'Dib."
"Is the Atreides ready?" Fade Rotha called, using the words of the ancient Canley ritual.
Paul chose to answer him in the Fremen way.
"May thy knife chip and shatter."
He pointed to the Emperor's blade on the floor, indicating that Fade Rotha should advance and take it. Keeping his attention on Paul, Fade Rotha picked up the knife, balancing it a moment in his hand to get the feel of it. Excitement kindled in him. This was a fight he had dreamed about, man against man, skill against skill, with no shields intervening. He could see a way to power opening before him, because the Emperor surely would reward whoever killed this troublesome duke. The reward might even be that haughty daughter and a share of the throne. And this yokel duke, this back-world adventurer, could not possibly be a match for Harkonnen, trained in every device and every treachery by a thousand arena combats. And the yokel had no way of knowing. He faced more weapons than a knife here.
"Let us see if you're proof against poison," Fade Rotha thought.
He saluted Paul with the Emperor's blade, said,
"Meet your death, fool!"
"Shall we fight, cousin?" Paul asked. And he cat-footed forward, eyes on the waiting blade, his body crouched low with his own milk-white kriss knife pointing out as though an extension of his arm. They circled each other, bare feet grating on the floor, watching with eyes intent for the slightest opening.
"How beautifully you dance," Fade Rotha said.
"He's a talker," Paul thought. "There's another weakness. He grows uneasy in the face of silence."
"Have you been shriven?" Fade Rotha asked.
Still, Paul circled in silence. And the old Reverend Mother, watching the fight from the press of the Emperor's suite, felt herself trembling. The Atreides youth had called the Harkonnen cousin. It could only mean he knew the ancestry they shared, easy to understand because he was the Kwisatz Haderach. But the words forced her to focus on the only thing that mattered to her here. This could be a major catastrophe for the Bene Gesserit breeding scheme. She had seen something of what Paul had seen here, that Fade Rotha might kill but not be victorious. Another thought, though, almost overwhelmed her. Two end products of this long and costly program faced each other in a fight to the death that might easily claim both of them. If both died here, that would leave only Fade Rotha's bastard daughter, still a baby, and unknown, an unmeasured factor, and Alia, the abomination.
"Perhaps you have only pagan rites here," Fade Rotha said. "Would you like the Emperor's truthsayer to prepare your spirit for its journey?"
Paul smiled, circling to the right, alert, his black thoughts suppressed by the needs of the moment. Fade Rotha leaped, fainting with right hand, but with the knife shifted in a blur to his left hand. Paul dodged easily, noting the shield-conditioned hesitation in Fade Rotha's thrust. Still, it was not as great a shield conditioning as some Paul had seen, and he sensed that Fade Rotha had fought before against unshielded foes.
"Doesn't Atreides run or stand and fight?" Fade Rotha asked.
Paul resumed his silent circling. Idaho's words came back to him, the words of training from the long-ago practice floor on Caladan.
"Use the first moments in study. You may miss many an opportunity for quick victory this way, but the moments of study are insurance of success. Take your time and be sure."
"Perhaps you think this dance prolongs your life a few moments," Fade Rotha said. "Well and good."
He stopped the circling, straightened. Paul had seen enough for a first approximation. Fade Rotha led to the left side, presenting the right hip as though the mailed fighting girdle could protect his entire side. It was the action of a man trained to the shield and with a knife in both hands. Or, and Paul hesitated, the girdle was more than it seemed. The Harkonnen appeared too confident against a man who this day led the forces of victory against Sardaukar legions. Fade Rotha noted the hesitation, said,
"Why prolong the inevitable? You but keep me from exercising my rights over this ball of dirt."
"If it's a flip dart," Paul thought,